back to the real thing tonight. The Athletics are in town. I don't like the fact that we can't give them a city, but, you know, they don't have one. I guess you can't call them Oakland if they left, and you can't call them Sacramento if they're not going to be there, and you can't call them Las Vegas if they're not there yet.
Who's your favorite all-time Athletic?
I'll say Reggie Jackson, okay, just because it was Reggie Jackson.
Yeah.
And you'll love this. Little cubby reporter, Phelps, working for the Kent State, you know, radio station. Bob DiBiasio of the Indians,
sure,
and now of the Guardians. Bob, longtime communications executive, was nice enough to give me passes back in the day when I was in college. I don't think Bob even remembers that, but he gave me passes back in the day. And Tom, we know at batting practice, you used to be able to hang out
on the cage.
Yeah. And, you know, little cubby reporter, I've got my little Panasonic tape recorder and my little plastic microphone, right? I'm going to get sound and talk to guys. And I walked up to Reggie Jackson.
Oh, I love this.
My first approach for it. I'm ready to go. Mr. Jackson, can I speak to you for a moment? My name is Jeff Phelps. I'm with the Kent State radio station. Can I speak to you? No.
Thank you, interview.
Mr. Jackson. And I thought, I got broken in by Reggie Jackson.
Did you have a second approach or did you just let it go?
No, that was it for him.
Oh, that's funny.
I was done with him.
Yeah, those were the glory days, right? You could literally hang on the cage.
Oh, yeah.
And some guys would do their interview with you right there.
Well, they're taking BP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you would at least, like you said, approach them and say,
can I talk to you?
Yeah, can we go in the dugout or in the clubhouse or whatever? Yeah. I love that. I tell you, I was so spoiled when I broke in with UPI in the 80s, and I covered the Mets and the Yankees. I would be at the old Yankee Stadium, leaning on that cage,
great
talking.
Venue.
Oh, it was the best. I just love
that. And that was kind of the way baseball worked then. It doesn't work that way now.
No, they won't even let us on the grass anymore.
No, there were, and we, you and I have done this for way too long, so we have too many stories like this. But I was always impressed by two guys who did something that I thought was really, they didn't have to do. Where I'm down at the old stadium, and I was working at Channel 43 at the time. And, you know, I had checked with a guy, hey, can we talk to you later? And, you know, because they're doing BP. When you're doing BP, yeah, sure, no problem. And when they got done with BP, I was talking to somebody else because, you know, we're trying to do our job. And two guys I will always remember stood there and waited for me. One was Joe Carter.
Love it.
The other was, in his very short stint as a member of the Cleveland Indians, Terry Francona.
Shocking.
Yeah. And I just thought,
that guy?
It was really nice of you guys.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I know. Listen, for as many knuckleheads as there are out there, there's some really good guys, especially in baseball. And that's why I enjoyed covering that sport more than the others because, to your point, Jeff, the access was so good. And you could just sit in the dugout and shoot the breeze with people.
And they... It wasn't like you were intruding, Tom.
No,
that's where baseball put you and wanted you.
Exactly.
That was the weird thing.
I tweeted this the other night, and just because you brought up the All-Star game, and by the way, we can talk about the conclusion of that game here at some point. I'm still trying to figure out the penalty shootout. Joe Torre, I was lucky enough, privileged enough to cover the Yankees in the mid-90s when he was a manager there. And Joe Torre would hold court in the dugout before every game, once we got done with the normal questions about, you know, today's starting pitcher and this, that, and whatever Yankee crisis of the day was going on, Joe Torre would just hold court and talk about, like, the glory days of New York baseball, about, you know, growing up rooting for the New York Giants and going to the Polo Grounds and all that. And I would just sit there, it just transfixed. And really grew to appreciate him and what a good person he is. And it was so great to see him on the field the other night. I didn't know.
Aaron Boone sent him out for a pitching change.
I think today's his 85th birthday, as a matter of fact.
Is it really?
Yeah. Mm.
Well, I wouldn't have guessed he was 85.
Same.
By the way he walked out
on
the field.
I know. Where did those 25 years go, by the way?
I don't know. Hit 363 to win a batting title for the Cardinals back in the day.
Very nice. Third baseman, number 9.
After being a catcher in Atlanta, and it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Now he's hitting 363. Good for him.
So we got the guards going into a second half.
Way to veer us back onto the path.
Yeah, let's get
Tom.
Back onto.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Menigan just pointed at me like, oh, Phelps derailed the show.
Yeah. So,
hold on. Let's find. Let's hit the calendar. This doesn't happen very often.
As we mentioned earlier,
at least it was baseball.
Before we got on the Reggie Jackson tangent, there, the schedule was favorable here for the guards, right? They get the A's coming out of the gate.
Yeah.
You know, to your point that you mentioned earlier, got to hit the ball. I mean, there have been too many games here over the last month where, whether I started watching the game early or not, I would tune in the fourth or fifth inning, and then the Guardians were either being no hit or shut out by Aaron Civale or name your pitcher of the day. So they got to get production, Jeff, as you mentioned before, from those guys, those young guys that you're counting on, right? Mm-hmm. The Nolan Jones, Daniel Schneeman, you know, Gabe Arias, who's playing pretty well until he got hurt. You know, when he comes back up here, I don't know if we're going to see Juan Brito or not, but he's another guy that kind of got sidetracked here, a guy they were counting on.
I mentioned him the other day, Dan and I. Was it yesterday, Daniel? Yeah, it was yesterday. Thank you very much. There was just so much good stuff. You know, I couldn't remember what day it was, where we looked at guys who we thought, you know, had the best first half for hitters or pitchers. Could be the guy in the second half, might be the guy coming up from the minors who could help. I put Juan Brito as my guy who might be the most likely guy to have an impact in the second half, who's in the minors now. And the reason why was he's at second base, and it's wide open. I know Schneeman's been terrific. I want Daniel as my super utility guy. I think he's done a fine job, but I want him to get plenty of at-bats filling in all over the place. I don't know if it's going to be Gabe Arias or if it's going to be Rocchio, but they need to find out what they have in Juan Brito, because Bazana's on the way.
Yeah.
If Bazana doesn't get here, they really screwed up. And so we assume he's going to get here, and I would assume it's next year. But I would think they'd like to get Juan Brito some major league at-bats.
I think he was the short-term plan, Jeff, heading into this season
before the injuries happened.
So, he's a guy they got to get a quick look at. You know, you mentioned Rocchio before. I was really intrigued with the way he played down the stretch here in the first half.
He got better, didn't he?
Yeah, good at bats.
After coming back from Columbus.
Played well in the field. You know, it's no different than what happened to Kyle Manzardo last year, right? I mean, they brought him up, wasn't ready, you know, needed to kind of get, you know, knocked back into whatever, headed back down to Columbus, figured some things out, came back and was a different ball player and has been productive. He's another guy, Jeff, that they got to get a little bit more out of, right? I mean, if you're going to be competitive, if you're going to hang in this wild card race, which I don't see any reason why they shouldn't. Now, granted, there's a half dozen teams all in the same ballpark, so to speak. They're going to be competing for those spots, but I think they'll hang around. I do. I think that there's no reason why this team should not get back to 500 or above here in pretty quick order. And then, you know, listen, you're in August, you're playing competitive games. That's all you can ask for as a fan.
What should Steven Vogt do? And then ultimately, what should the front office do with Nolan Jones, who has hit? And I hated when they traded Nolan Jones for Juan Brito.
Same.
Because you don't have this type of player. At least find out if he can do something. And then he did in Colorado. He hasn't since that one good year. Yeah. He's come back here. To me, he's been nothing but a puzzle that I want to see get finished off.
There's been flashes.
Yeah. He's only three home runs.
Right.
Which is not what you expect.
Should have a dozen.
His batting average was atrocious, but it's gotten better every month, Tom. What do they do with him right now?
Keep playing him.
I think so, too.
Yeah, keep giving him at-bats.
Steady at-bats. I'd like to see him play every day.
Now, I think to your point, Jeff, I think you look at him, I think, as maybe some front offices around baseball would look at him, like an intriguing guy.
I think he really is, Tom. And the fact that they've played him in center field and he hasn't looked atrocious.
I think he looks good in the outfield.
It adds to his versatility.
Yeah.
He hasn't played it. He came up as an infielder and he hasn't really done that here. He's been nothing but an outfielder since he's come back.
He's had some big hits.
Yeah.
Especially over the last month or so.
Hits it hard.
He's one of those guys, though, Jeff, for whatever reason, and we've seen this over the years, he goes into those bad funks of 0-18. Yeah. 2-26, and he just can't seem to get anything going. Now, and Schneeman's the same way, where they kind of hit the ball on the screws a few times and just had no luck for it, right?
Yeah.
You know, Jones comes across to me like that, and I was kidding about the five-iron stinger before, but it seems to me like if Nolan Jones would just get a little more launch angle, there's some more, there's some power production, I think, that can happen there. I mean, he pulls the ball down the line every once in a while, can go the other way when he needs to. I think he's a pretty good hitter, but, you know, I look at him much like I do with Bo Naylor. I always want more because I think there's more there.
Yeah, I think there is.
I think he's a guy that could, that could hit 260 consistently.
He's out of options, Tom.
That's the other thing.
They're not going to send him down. I think he has to hit for more power. Maybe it's as simple as launch angle. If it is, fix it. It's the All-Star break.
Right.
Fix it. If he doesn't, I wonder what they do with him. Because I think he's completely on a one-year trial.
I'm with you. And I think, we got the trade deadline coming up. I think that's a name that could, you know, like I said, I think there's front offices that look at him the same way that you and I do, that there's still potential there. He's still young enough. There's still a lot to work with.
6'6", athletic and powerfully built.
Plug him in.
Sorry, I want those guys.
Yeah, give me a half dozen.
Tom, they just drafted a handful of those guys.
They certainly did. Yeah.
I mean, that's what they drafted.
Including
Nolan Jones.
Lord Tubington. We didn't get to talk about that guy yet. Yeah. I've Jones was that guy, right? He was that unicorn for a few years, wasn't he? He was the guy in the minor leagues. You were like, okay.
Can't wait to see him.
Wait till Nolan Jones gets here, right? He was the Chase Dunlauter. So, I'm with you. And I think, again, for things to go well for this Guardians team in the second half, that's what they're going to need. They're going to need the Nolan Joneses of the world to get going.
They also might need the front office to make a move you might not want to make. Trade deadline is 13 days away, July 31st. Should they or shouldn't they? Tom Withers' thoughts on that, and I think you might know what I'm talking about, coming up on Baskin and Phelps. Tom Withers in for Andy Baskin today. I'm Jeff Phelps, Menigan behind the glass, Meredith taking your phone calls. Trade deadline coming up, Tom, and I think there are a bunch of decisions that need to be made. Big picture to me is this. If a general manager in any sport gets a phone call and is offered something that general manager thinks improves his team's situation. And I'm not going to say improve the team, because sometimes you make a trade to improve your situation, meaning next year we're going to get, you know, two guys who are going to really help us.
Right.
We're going to get three guys who are really going to help us. That general manager has to not only take the phone call, but if it makes your situation better, you have to take that trade. So you never know what might be offered to Chris Antonetti before July 31st.
There will be a lot offered to him. I caution people all the time, especially when we get into these silly seasons around trade deadlines and all the sports, right? This is what general managers do for a living.
It's what they're paid for.
They have phone conversations with teams every day. Hey, really like so-and-so. What would it take for us to get so-and-so? These offers are thrown around. So anytime I see these reports about...
Think about making, as stupid as it sounds,
yeah,
a fantasy football trade.
Right.
It's the same kind thing of stuff.
So when I've read these recent reports about, you know, the Guardians speaking to the Yankees, of course they are speaking to the Yankees. It's a contending team that's looking for a closer. There's phone calls that have been made already about Emmanuel Clase. There's no question about that.
Multiple.
It's happened.
With multiple teams.
Probably happened this morning. Yeah. Yep. You know, all those contenders are looking and talking about him.
It's a valuable piece to finish off a team that thinks it has a chance to go deep.
If you're the Yankees, you're not calling the Guardians about Emmanuel Clase and Cade Smith. Of course you are. You'd have to. So
it's Brian Cashman's job.
Yeah. Now, whether or not they're making an offer that's enticing enough for the Guardians to make a move is another story. And I, you know, Jeff, you and I have talked about this and talked to Dan a little bit about it off the air as well. I'm holding on to Clase as long as I can. Now, you blow my doors off and you make me an offer, so to speak, that I can't refuse, I'll move it. I'll move him. If you can give me back, you're going to take, arguably, from me, the best closer in baseball, he's in the conversation. I want back a right fielder that I can immediately plug into the lineup and maybe a prospect. You want to give me Spencer Jones, your top prospect? What we can do, we can do some business there. So big decisions. Again, you know, there's a little bit of time here for the Guardians to kind of assess where, I mean, that's part of what the All-Star break was about, kind of assess where you're at. You know, can we really make a run here? Is it worth hanging on to what we've got?
See, that's... I cut you off.
Yeah,
that's the thing, I think, the big picture.
Yeah.
I mean, if if the trade helps you, it helps you. But big picture, I think they need to decide, do we sell or do we buy? And I have a hard time thinking buy in this situation.
I'm with you. But how much do you sell? How big a piece do you sell? Like to me, Kosse is one of maybe 4 to 5 players that I think are almost untouchable with the Guardians. Obviously, Ramirez is untouchable. Mm-hmm. To me, Kwan is untouchable. You got a guy that I know they've talked extension with him in the past. I know there's been reports about him turning it down, whatever. I still think there's a real good relationship, a healthy one between Stephen Kwan's camp and the Guardians. Yeah, I still see a long future for him in Cleveland.
I hope you're right.
I think Kosse is untouchable. Again, unless you are going to absolutely blow my doors off. I also think Cade Smith is untouchable. I think also from the standpoint that if you're going to move Kosse, then Cade Smith would be your closer, right? So I think those four guys to me are players that right now, listen, and they're going to be the ones that are going to be sought by other teams, but I hold on to them. I hold on to them close.
Paul Sewald's injury, again, doesn't help the situation.
Yeah.
Because you brought him in here to be a back end of the bullpen guy. He could go anywhere. He's been a closer. That hurts them at this time because the trade deadline's less than 2 weeks away. He factored into it in some way, shape, or form to me. I saw, and anybody can speculate on trades, and people throw out, the Toronto Blue Jays should call the Guardians and get Hunter Geddes. Okay, well, great. That's swell. What would you get? I don't want to move Hunter Geddes. I don't want to touch that pitching, but if you get your socks knocked off. And with Kwan, I thought of this, Tom, and I did not like the move at the time. I understood it, but I didn't like it. When the Indians traded for Andrew Miller, and Andrew, premier relief pitcher, but he was a setup guy and a relief pitcher. Now, was he phenomenal in the back end of the bullpen? You bet he was. But this is the type of haul, and I'd say it probably didn't work out for the Yankees.
Remind me, Frazier,
who was the top hitting prospect in the organization at the time. And I thought you can't trade these guys because you don't develop them.
Right.
Well, he never actually took off in New York either. And Justice Sheffield, who was a shorter left-handed pitcher who was a first-round draft pick, who ended up in Seattle and was okay. And then two other guys who haven't had big-time careers. But that's what you're looking for.
Right.
If you're trading a guy like Kwan, the Yankees got the best pitching or the best hitting prospect in the Guardians organization in Clint Frazier and a guy who was a first round draft choice as a pitcher. That's what you're looking at. And two other guys
100%
got thrown into the deal.
Yeah. And listen, there's a lot of other smaller moves that could happen here as well, right? I mean, you got the expiring contract of Lane Thomas. You've got Carlos Santana's expiring contract.
Carlos is hitting and playing. Lane is not hitting and injured.
Right.
And that kills them here, Tom.
I know.
That kills them.
And I hang on to Santana as well.
Would you?
Yeah, I would. Now, again.
Why?
I don't know what you're going to get in return. Why?
You're not ready to play Manzardo at first base every day?
Listen, I like Kyle Manzardo. I get nervous when there's a pickoff throw thrown over there.
Well, you know why? Because you've seen him butcher those.
I mean, there was a play last week. It was the same game where Schneeman made that diving stop.
Yeah.
There was also the diving catch. He makes a diving stop late in that game, scrambled to his feet, threw a one hopper that Manzardo couldn't handle that I guarantee you Santana backhands. So
Carlos is really good.
He's really good, and he's been solid in that lineup. Like
really
he's been one of the few things that you could almost count on, right? You can count on a quality at bat from him every single time up. There's no doubt about that.
And he's a professional hitter.
He has been. And he's also a professional off the field as well, which means something that I know people don't want to hear that. And
nobody wants to hear that.
No, a clubhouse guy.
We know
great
how that
guy
actually
that.
Affects a team.
It is. It's a big deal, especially in baseball. So I hold on to Carlos. To your point, I mean, Thomas has just been damaged goods. I mean, if not for those couple of home runs last October, it's been bad.
Right.
It really has. And I like Lane. He's a really nice kid.
And you hope he gets it together, and you hope he gets it together here, but he's a free agent at the end of the year, and there's no way they're going to invest in him in anything other than, hey, you want a minimum contract, and you can try and make the team in spring training.
So if you're the Guardians, Jeff, let me ask you this. Do you feel like you're in it? I mean, do you feel like you're in it enough that you don't necessarily sell the farm and you maybe you sell a piece or two and maybe you try to get back a player that can fit into the lineup here for the second half? Is that kind of where they're at?
I would tweak if I can. But Tom, what they have to trade, you know, like if you don't want to move Santana, what else can you trade?
Yeah, I know. I know.
You know, you're very limited.
You
don't want to trade anybody in the rotation. I don't. And with the Luis Ortiz situation, you lost a guy who you were counting on as being one of your five guys and who had pitched like he deserved to be one of your five guys. And that pushed down the road. So I don't expect to see him this year or maybe ever again in the Guardians uniform. I hope they do. I hope he's exonerated. But I've hit delete because...
You have to.
Gambling's a big deal. And if by chance he's guilty of something, I don't think he'll be back. And I like Joey Cantillo.
I do too.
I want to see him. You know, so hopefully he's able to do that. There are some other guys that were former higher draft choices that are knocking on the door. Parker Messick, Nick Hazy, who we haven't seen a lot of. But
enough to see that there's something there. Yeah.
And, you know, so there are pitchers there, but I want to hang on to those guys and sort through them a little bit, to be honest. You could trade a bullpen arm if you think you have a bullpen arm ready to come up, but your bullpen is something Stephen Vogt has just leaned on like crazy since he's been manager here. And do you want to take that away from him? I don't know, unless you make the big move, which is trading Emmanuel Clase.
Yeah. Boy, there's a lot to digest there, isn't there? And, you know, obviously... Should they not come out of the break playing good ball, then everything changes as well, right? Doesn't it? You know, if you stumble against the A's coming out of the gate or what have you.
But that's a short sample size because the trading deadline's less than 2 weeks away.
I know, and they think much broader than we are now.
But
so.
Tom, if they're 4.5 back right now in the wild card with a bunch of teams to leap, if they came and fell flat and they fell eight games out in the wild card before the trade deadline – and there are still the five games to leapfrog. Let's be realistic. It's not going to happen. You know, it's not even the games to me as much as the games combined with the number of teams. You're gonna think all those teams aren't going to play well. Right. And so it might be telling in the first, week?
It has to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then what do they do?
And I'm sure these were the conversations that, you know, Antonetti and Chernoff had over this break here. And, you know, they sat down with everybody and kind of assessed where they're at. You know, I'll still get back to, I want to see DeLauder. I want to see Kafis. I want to see him soon. I thought we would have seen them by now.
Yeah, I want to see Brito if he's healthy.
I mean, there's still plenty to watch with this team, Jeff.
And yeah, there is.
Listen, you're a baseball guy. I'm a baseball guy. I love the day-to-day. I think it's what makes the sport, you know, endearing and charming and whatever other word you want to use there. There's a lot of moving pieces on a daily basis with 27 guys on the roster. There's a lot to consider. There's the here and there's the future that you've got to consider as well. It's not an easy gig for Antonetti from that standpoint, right? To stay competitive, to stay as a contender with the financial limitations and all that we've talked about a gazillion times. But the bottom line is, if you're going to trade Emmanuel Clase, you better be getting an absolute haul and then some.
I couldn't agree with that more. The draft was held, and the first pick, I thought, wow, that's not typical Guardians. And then it kept going. What did you make out of? And we had Paul Hoynes on the show.
They got a tackle and two offensive guards.
We had Hoynes on the show, and I mentioned to Paul, I said, do you think what they did in the draft affects the trade deadline at all? And he said, I hadn't thought of that. And he said, prospects, you know, and draft picks are, if they're quick here, they're not here next year. They're here the following year. And Paul thought, probably not. You know, they'd still move guys to bring in guys to help the current team.
Yep.
But I just, you know, you see Nick Kurtz, who we're going to see with the A's in town. You know, who was drafted last year and is already contributing. The Guardians drafted enough college hitters with good track records. I'll bet one of those kids is up here next year. out of that whole bunch, I'll bet one makes that leap. And oh, I just, yeah. I found it really interesting that they drafted that kind of player.
Yeah. Yeah. Not dissimilar from Bizzano last year as your number one, right? Yeah. A guy that can just rake.
Yeah.
Again, that's another guy, Jeff, like, you know, you made the point with the A's bringing that kid up. I thought Bizzano would be here this year. And I think he still could be, although he's had to deal with injury. The injury thing is a big setback, and he's got a longer way.
He was doing okay at AA Akron, but he wasn't.
Just okay. He started out great, which got me really excited because I know how high they are on him. So, but I do expect to see him next year. But I'm with you on the Juan Brito. Let's get Juan Brito here as soon as he's healthy and see what you got.
And they've tried to play him at other spots and see if they have anything else there. So. It starts back tonight. A's. I was going to say Oakland. I caught myself. A's against the Guardians. A gentleman who used to cover the Cavaliers for ESPN now covers the NBA for ESPN. And he said something about a guy who wore number 23 here and who wears 6 for the Lakers that made me think, well, sure. But it also made me think something else long term. And Tom Withers knows LeBron as well as anybody. It's coming up on Baskin and Phelps. The infamous Jeff Thomas leaving the room. I'm Jeff Phelps, Tom Withers in for Andy Baskin today. Menigan flying our ship, 216-474-0092, and Meredith taking your phone calls at 216-474-0092. Coming up at 12:20, Daniel Ofusi from ESPN covers the Browns is going to join us as the rookies are reporting today.
I know that guy.
And then at 1 o'clock, Tim May, Letterman Row, going to chime in on the British Open, the Open, but I say British, so we all know what it is. And a little Ohio State football for Ohio State.
It looks sunny now at the Open after we saw what looked to be the end of the world about a half an hour ago.
Dan doesn't like sunny at the Open.
This is the Open. You're supposed to be miserable. The wind's supposed to be blowing sideways. It's supposed to be dumping buckets of rain on top of these guys' heads. They're supposed to be wearing 17 layers and hardly able to swing their clubs.
They were for a while.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they've had a change of clothes here and a change of heart, and there's some blue skies in the background. So it's fun to watch it, though, isn't it? Like how they have to scramble on almost every single hole. You know, dealing with, you know, as we're talking about the inclement conditions there in lovely Northern Ireland. So
even more than regular tournaments, you can't let a double or a triple bogey get you down. Yeah. Okay, I'll just keep going here.
Scotty Scheffler making a push. There's a surprise.
There's a shocker.
Yeah.
Dave McMenamin used to work here in Cleveland covering.
I remember that dude.
Yeah, covering the Cavaliers for ESPN. And he came here from Los Angeles and then went back to Los Angeles. LeBron going to the Lakers, and Dave went out there and covers the Lakers and then covers everything now for ESPN doing basketball.
So is McManaman's coming back to Cleveland? Is that what you're breaking news?
I don't think, if LeBron does, I'll bet Dave does. Although his new wife, Malika Andrews, might not appreciate that very much. Dave, on his one of his ESPN reports, made a comment about LeBron James, who, by the way, turns 41 in December.
Unbelievable. December 30th.
It's hard to believe. It's Tiger Woods' birthday.
I'm so old.
And Dave said this: I think we have to start thinking that this could be his last year in the league. Rich Paul told me there was no extension talk because they didn't ask for an extension. They didn't broach the subject. Now, you could say, why didn't the Lakers offer it? Well, sure you could, but Paul's point to me was this wasn't a point of tension. Not something that LeBron's team pursuing. So I think you look at it as, yep, very limited time remaining in his career. We kind of already knew that. That's one of the points. Yes, you kind of already knew that. He turns 41 in December. But I had a thought, Tom, when I mentioned Dave's thought to you, you said, yep, well, of course, 41 years old. And then I said to you, do you ever see LeBron as a guy who would hang out and play 15 minutes a game and average 12 points and not be the key guy? And without even missing a beat, you said?
Not for a second.
Exactly.
I could see LeBron, I'll take it a step further. I could see LeBron going and playing in China for a year for $1 billion. I could see. Wow. I could see LeBron.
Never thought of that.
I could see LeBron going to Europe and playing for a year.
To why? Not to make money, but to spread the brand?
To spread the brand. I mean, like, listen, he's followed in Michael Jordan's sneakers since day one, right? And I think he wants to continue to enhance that LeBron brand. You know, he's already become a billionaire, what have you, but there's no reason for him not to want to, you know, expand his kingdom, so to speak. You know, and I think there is basketball for him after LA. I think there's basketball for him at a high level after LA. You know, I watched him at 40 last year, and he looked
good, didn't he?
Jeff, he's still one of the 10 best all-around players in the league.
Yeah.
At 40.
Tom, it's hard to argue.
It's unlike anything we've ever seen before.
So is his training regimen and the way he takes care of his body. You got to see it up close. Yeah. I got to see it up close. I've never seen a guy work as hard at staying physically ready to go as LeBron.
Mike Mencius has been the secret sauce for him for 20 plus years, his personal trainer. And
was the former assistant athletic trainer for the Cavaliers with Max Benton.
Correct.
Great man, Max Benton. Max, if you're listening, howdy.
Hey, Max.
And then Mike went with LeBron to Miami and then came back here but became a personal trainer for LeBron. And he works with the teams, but he's LeBron's trainer.
He may spend as much time or more with LeBron as Savannah does with
LeBron.
Wouldn't
be surprised.
I mean, it is literally a 24/7 ordeal to keep that guy in shape during the season. So yeah, the end is nigh, right? I mean, it's gonna happen at some point. But to your point, Jeff, I don't see LeBron hanging around, you know, being the odd man off the bench, you know, filling in for a team. He's LeBron James, for goodness sake. You know, all eyes are going to always be on him. He's always going to be the center of attention. He's always going to be, you know, the alpha male in the room. You know, I'm not going to be shocked, though, too, Jeff, that at some point he decides I've had enough and maybe steps away.
In season?
I don't know about in season. I think it would come after a season. So I could see him after the season, you know, depending on how he plays and if he stays healthy or what have you, then saying, yeah, I've had enough. But listen, I don't think the China thing is far-fetched.
That's an interesting thought.
Yeah, I don't think a swing through Europe is not far-fetched.
And it wouldn't be like being locked in for an 82-game season. They don't have – their seasons aren't that long.
Can you imagine how much money some teams would be willing to throw at him? I mean, it would be – you know, to play for him to play in Europe, it'd kind of be the equivalent of, you know, a team going out and signing a Lionel Messi or you know, a soccer team going after one of the – you know, whatever the top name is that's out there.
Yeah.
He's LeBron James. It sells a lot of tickets.
Has averaged at least 24.4 points a game every year since his rookie year.
It's remarkable.
I mean, that's hard.
Well, then look at the other numbers. What is it? 7.5 rebounds and 7.5 assists. Yeah. I mean,
it's nuts.
He owns every record that there is.
The one thing, Tom, when, you know, and because he's from here, he still owns a house here. Still pays attention to everything Cleveland. Lets you know he pays attention to it because he's active on social media about it. When there was rumbling, you know, hey, you know, coming to the Cavs and all that stuff, blah, 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 blah. I thought this, there's no way that's going to happen. However, he would be the absolute perfect three.
For this team right now.
On this team right now.
I hear you.
I mean, you couldn't go around the league. I mean, like I when the Durant stuff came up a little bit,
yeah.
I said, of course, Durant in here, that'd be phenomenal. I think LeBron would be an even better fit. He would be unbelievable with this crew.
Yeah.
And I mean they would win the NBA championship.
Yeah, it's kind of fantasy.
I'm sorry, they would win it.
It's a little bit fantasy basketball right now, but it's fun to think about, Jeff, and you're so right. I mean, could you imagine him
with Donovan and Evan?
Wow.
and let's just say Jared Allen's still here. And Jared just, hey, I'll get some boards. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Here, go run the break, would you?
Myself and, excuse me, Tim Reynolds, who's a colleague of mine, the national writer for the AP, we've kicked this around over the last couple of years as to, you know, what is LeBron's final landing spot in the NBA? And Tim seems to think that it's going to be New York, just from the standpoint that when you think about LeBron and that brand, right? He's got the Midwest covered, took care of that in the early years here in Cleveland. Then he came back, yeah. Right?
He's got the South
Coast. He's gone to the South Coast. He's taking care of Miami and all that comes with Miami.
Southern states.
Comes with Miami, right?
The whole glitz and everything else.
He's got the LA market cornered now, right? He's done his thing out there. He's got his production company, et cetera. What's left? The Big Apple, the mecca of basketball where he loves playing. Could you imagine LeBron ending up with the Knicks and helping them end one of the longest droughts in NBA history? Oh, by the way, something that he's already done here. So I don't know, just food for thought. But
who's the coach of the Knicks now, Tom?
Oh, interesting. I know that guy. So do you.
I hadn't even thought of that. That's interesting.
And by the way,
because it would be about legacy, yeah. Marketing,
yeah.
Selling,
yeah.
And finishing it off. He'd be a great fit there too.
And by the way, I couldn't be happier for Mike Brown. And I think Mike Brown is ready for this now. Like he's been through enough, I think, in his career. You know,
did a nice job in Sacramento. He got
a
raw deal.
Got a raw deal. Terrible deal. He and Michael Malone.
How did
either one of those guys got fired is beyond me. So I think Mike is ready for the New York market, which I don't think people here can quite appreciate. No knock to Cleveland fans or what have you. It's just, it's a different world there in every single sport. I mean,
how long did you work in New York?
Too long. I was there from as a journalist professional from 86 through 98.
Wow, that's a lot of time in New York.
It was enough time where, and literally, each game is almost like a season, the way it's dissected. And, you know, you saw the passion of Knicks fans during this recent playoff run.
Knicks fans are awesome.
They are awesome.
I love
watching.
They can
be awful, too, but they are awesome.
I love watching games at the Garden. I mean, they're
on the floor, for God's sake.
They went nuts when one of their players did a crossover dribble on somebody and cut back. You know, it was like, and they're like, yeah. I mean, they're picking up every minute detail in a game. It's a
very educated fan as well, too.
Exactly. I mean, it's a fascinating place to watch a basketball
game. They're a little
game.
Bit crazy, of course, yeah. Which is...
I love watching games.
I do, too. There's a good level of crazy, but they're very passionate. And so, yeah, I could see, and I tend to agree with Tim, I could see LeBron from a marketing standpoint, from a basketball standpoint, from a legacy standpoint, considering New York very, very much.
That would have to happen real quick, wouldn't it?
It would, and I don't know what kind of package then the Knicks could put together. I mean, you know, much like we talked about with the Cavs, you would hate to, I mean, you're going to have to give up, right? You're going to have to give up a lot now.
Unless he signed there next year as a free agent.
Well, that's
the
thing.
But then he'd be 42.
But again, LeBron at 42 is different than anybody else we've ever seen at 42.
Maybe for 1 year in New York, he would be okay with 16 points a game, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, something like that.
And another title.
Maybe an Olympic gold medal. The gentleman to my right has covered multiple Olympic games. There's a gentleman who owned an NBA team who doesn't think guys like LeBron should be going to the Olympics anymore. You're the perfect guy to ask about this. But the guy who said this didn't say it for the reasons you might think. We'll explain all that. And Tom will have great insight because he's covered how many Olympic games?
I was lucky, 10.
10 Olympic games. Tom's opinion on a bold comment from Mark Cuban. Next on Baskin and Phelps.